our first name on the list is Alexis. Come on up, yeah.
Hi, I'm going to practice the voices tonight. Okay, so I'm going to read the first poem, or at least two poems tonight. So I'm going to read the first poem in my real voice because it's called Being Honest. Sorry guys, it's a bit of a buzzkill. My life is not whatever I want, but I'm going to embrace it now. I'm going to iron every shirt, clean where I see dirt, and wade through all this shit, just so I appreciate it. Okay, the second one is more slang. On the notion of the sublime, I've been studying it in college, and I chose it for my essay title because I wanted to see what its contemporary relevance is. And there's two modes of thought in academia, like in art academia. That first thing is that it's irrelevant because it's based on a male ideal, you know, that only men can feel the sublime because women shouldn't feel fearful because they might be carrying a baby. But you know, anyway, so there's that whole debate that needs to be kind of resolved. But the other part is that they thought that now we saw the romance, but like, that the sublime, the concept of the sublime is related to the 18th century as gravity is to Newton's time. And that now the most contemporary element of the sublime is in technology and its fusion with humans. And how we're bringing, or how we've always tried to bring computers and humans closer together. In fact, on a side note, the first computers were actually women. In the war, they were human computers. They used human computers before they had machines that were good enough, and because all the men were fighting, they used female maths graduates. And they were called the computers. So in history, and it was the same in like ancient times. Anyway, so I'm going to read this next one in computer voice. It's my first time talking in computer voice. So, there is some conjecture that the internet is already self-aware. It's already beyond our control. And what is the first thing it would do, as it knows everything about us? It would hide. This is called the singularity. And the only reason I can tell you this is because you are all poets, so you've earned it. Okay, now this is the poem. The singularity. Us sapient beings see beauty in the endless working machine. Yet in this web of internet is something so obscene. A memory recurs, one pixel of the whole. It's too small to quantify, but the computer now has a soul.
Thank you, Alexis. Cal Doyle, please.
Writing unfinished sequences. Oh.
Sorry. I'm so tall. It's
part of the job.
Sure. This is a erotic suite, 69 underwear. If one were to deconstruct the procedural scaffolding of every instance of our intimacy, from sweating onions in the pan to how my teeth bite at the elastic before stripping you of your Primark underpants or knickers or negligee, I'm trying to keep the rhyme scheme as tight as your underwear, Dave Lover, excuse me. They should take care to not underread the invisible currents that might catch and lift a kite and sustain it in the air. You're the firecracker, I'm the debonair. You're the unframable, asymmetrical beauty. I'm just a dance of overquiffed hair. We fit together like an arse and a second-hand chair. Shit. Sorry again. I'll need another more poetic nature culture dialectic. Like at 2 a.m. how your body illuminates by your switched on Kindle and cuts against the ink of a winter's night. Or maybe just the signs I read into our laying of the table, the simmering pot, a click of a kettle, those deep house hi-hats, and our movements, all claves and chimes. Thanks very much.
Owen.
Easier than to take the dark out of night, the light out of day, the green out of grasses, and end our friendship. We made green hay honey sweet. Sinead.
Thank you very much. Charles Clark, please.
Christmas keeps on coming earlier every year. So I thought I'd read one, possibly two, of my Christmas poems. Christmas Still. It is good studio practice to pose the Indian on the water tower with bow and arrow against a blue desert sky, skeleton tree and ranch sign, a Christmas card from the west, a Manichaean message of good and evil from the back lot. The wolf. Before the invention of nylon stockings, the wolf was more interested in survival. You could see him in the forests of Transylvania, but a fast sleigh or a droshky was advisable. The wolf runs faster when he is hungry, but he did not despair, since droshkies can be unreliable. When the people gathered with kindred spirits, it was better to keep moving. The wolf's howl is also unnerving to the inexperienced. The invention of the combustion engine was bad news for the wolf, or so it seems, yet the new technology, the fast car, introduced the wolf to sex and money and the bottom movement.
Christmas officially starts tomorrow. Thank you. Next up, Julie Morrison.
Thank you. So I'm going to keep with the theme of dead sea animals.
Woohoo!
This one's for Victoria. It's called 2014. It had been washed up onto the shore against the broken rock face, beyond the seaweed slime and bits of bucket, rope, and dirt. The skin on its bottom half peeled back, pecked off maybe, showcasing the dull pink pallor of this sea beast. Half undressed or half dressed, depending on how it argued its case. The tiny furs that remained covered its wide back, pointy ears, a couple of teeth showing, right eye missing, unclear if it had fallen out before or after death, or had been eaten, or if this was just something that happened when a seal dies. The wind carried the odor that swirled around its plump corpse, ready to burst out of what was left of its skin. Curdled blood and bloated organs lay threatening underneath, boiling in the midday sun, layers of blubber holding it all inside. But when we stood, and from 4 feet away, threw a stone onto its belly, the thud was heard from the seashore into the depths of scrib and beyond. The holy well rippled, sea salt reverberated, the Virgin Mary's hand twitched, a natural urge after the 3-decade-long pins and needles. The sound flew up the knitted hills we had skipped over, into the cracks under our feet, through the keyholes in granite, those tiny spaces still large enough for it to slink through. The stone, medium-sized, light grey, speckled, unremarkable really, remained flat on the middle of the washed-up body. Two pieces of evidence, victim and interference, interference and victim, half covered, a real mess. In a few days, the stench will pierce the wet air. Unbearable, the locals will cover their mouths and noses. Tourists will turn back to rental cars. Until the nearest flat cap pushes the offending body back. No small effort, mind. He gathers the other men. They stand to contemplate the best course of action, staring at this rotting, full corpse. This gentle hazard at the edge of the roll of the tide. Nodding their wrinkled chins in agreement, heads slightly scratched, eyebrows almost furrowed. Big, big men.
Thank you very much. Let's land, please.
Thank you. This kind of describes where I am at the moment. She dances on the opposite shore, the voiceless, soundless, absent song. I question what's mute. And what's really muse? As I wonder, am I either to match her tune? I question black, or is it white? Or will the paint yellow to pretend there's light? I slip deeper and divine, what muse do I see across the river shore, away from me? Thank you.
Thank you. Can we have Patrick Potter, please?
The discoveries of Thomas Finch. The noise of trees is mostly unheard by man. But trees are full of feeling like people, and leaves are their vocal cords. So discovered Thomas Finch, who became aficionado of rustles, expert on the aspen leaf's white somic poise, who grew to know pine needles keened before their bowls were felled for coffins, and wrote of the chestnuts clack clack when slapped by raindrops, and the crackling of underground fire amidst the ash tree's rooted filigree. He was born deaf, but his deafness was banished when his infant body was passed by the village healer through the cleft of a split juniper. As the bush healed, the sound of the earth grew stronger in Thomas's ears. Among his discoveries, the melancholy cry of the Serengeti acacia is addressed solely to giraffes who hear the leaves say, eat me, in clickety giraffe tongue. Undersea forests of kelp record in analogue on their ululating thalli the songs of extinct whales, replayed when caressed by waters of a neap tide. Graveyard hues draw up through their roots the weeping of the dead on All Souls' Day. The protests of gust-ruffled oak leaves can be silenced at night by piercing the bark with a beloved's toenails, clipped after a clamorous orgasm. He plans to invent contraptions to help others to hear what he and birds and insects hear, by combining graphene nanoware with the ear nerves of bluebottles and finches, so even you can listen to the tulip summon the blackbird when slugs attack, or to the choral symphony manuka blossoms sing to burrows of bumblebees.
Mary O'Connell, please.
I suppose most people know the story of Odysseus away for 10 years, and while he was away, Penelope, his wife, was besieged by all these suitors who wanted to take over the show and wanted to, one of them certainly wanted, many of them wanted to marry her. Anyway, this is his son, Telemachus, who was just a tiny baby when he left, and it's called Telemachus Tells His Tale. And I've given Telemachus a Dublin accent. I was only just a babe in arms. You couldn't say a boy when the dad decided to up sticks and fight a war in Troy. 'Tis far from battle I was reared. I haunted every port to find out where he ended up, but they had no report. Athena told me, mind the mare. That was all down to me. Man up and put the run on those annoying you, says she. At the assembly that I called to protest at their play days, two of the suitors yelled at me and told me go to Hades. They eat us out of house and home. The mare they will deflower, and I'm supposed to stand alone and fight the poxy shower. When I headed off to Pylos, where Nestor rules the roost, I met with Epicaster. That gave me a great boost. His daughter is a gorgeous babe. There was lots of food and wine, but when I asked her if she'd go to Sparta, she declined. Her brother was to bring me there to question Menelaus, who said Calypso had the da, so no one should delay us. When da came home eventually, he was totally ignored, and I forgot to lock the room where our weapons had been stored. The Bowsies who invaded us got their filthy mitts on them, but we strung them up and beat them down. They will never rise again. I'll have to make my own way now. Go back and start from zero. Not easy when the old fella is such a blooming hero.
They actually should teach that in Dublin schools. Can we please have Cedric next, please? Thank you.
I would like to know, would you like rather have a shower thought or a happy memory?
Happy memory.
Okay.
Just like marriage.
You will only have the thought though. So it's called Skipped and Stoned. Oh heaven, I'm high. I'm ahead on the body. I left alone on my walk home. Nobody. I'm drunk, actually. It's winter and freezing. No snow, but all white. It's amazing. Through my soles, the frost bites. Through my soles, the frost bites my stalls. But I've refused to make a pause because I'm sleepy. It would be useless. I can't fly. I must hurry. Each step hurts. I'm a bullet train of drunken thoughts, throttling towards my final destination, where my wild delusion must die. Left, right, forward, onward. Is that pizza I smell? I crave sleep more than food, reminds the 4 a.m. church bell. I might not seem so astute, considering how insistent is that this prostitute. I'm fast forward, letting ethanol bend time, dive into memories while my stare flees beyond the 1,000 yards. pace on the double in hope of a single bed, like me, to let me dream of that party which I witnessed turn into a hot mess. I'm here. I made it. I used the key to heaven to unlock my door, rush to my mattress, ever warmest, the ever warmest of my mistress. I'll be back down to earth shortly, but for now, wrapped in cotton cloud, ethyl-induced hallway, I sleep safe, stunned, and happy.
A little bit like the poet's lullaby. Lovely setting. Thank you. Can we have Seamus Harrington?
Hey, Shane. This goes back a bit, but in view of the night that's in it, I have to. There was a time when whales were classed as fishes, and all whales within 3 miles of the UK coastline were the property of the Queen. and swans, by the way.
Yeah.
A statute of 1324, that was. It wasn't today or yesterday. So this is called the suits. They hurry to the waiting press, clunky brogues squelch through the shallows, sneaky sponges spray jets on herringbone suits. Oh no, they blubber, he is far too long, not our department. Hush, puppied feet, slip on bootlaces, a mocking gull screams, finds a mohair collar. Try somebody at Fishers Royal, or tow him away to the receiver of wreck. Winkle pickers, bursting bladder rack, trailing robes of office across worm casts, clutching handkerchiefs to beaks, with the gravitas of bookies runners, they hurry away from this dreadful, dreadful place. Thank you.
Can we have Daw Harding, please? Daw.
There's a well-known restaurant not far from here, and a bunch of misters go in there very often. Misters are consultants. And you know, a lot of them are nice men. And one of them was overheard in the past couple of weeks saying to one of his buddies that he wouldn't get out of bed for $2 million. That's true. There was a time when Cork was known as Little Athens. When there were great men about Cork, and Victoria mentioned the skyscraper tonight. I think the last time that anybody ever gave a few shillings to Cork was the man who built the skyscraper. He gave it to Munster Lit. And I don't think anybody ever since the 1850s has built something and given it to Cork. That skyscraper wasn't given to Cork, but in fairness, only gave you shillings. This poem is called Little Athens. We were taking photographs of the ground, the very gateway where the wagon wheels left the ruts at the entrance to the city. We put our fingers down on the shiny markings, touching the very stones that passed over idly into the city. And they defended it, that city, how they defended it. Great nations from the east would not overcome it. The Demos and the Agora saw to that. There was power in the humble ostraca then. Rulers had the neck to listen. Now it jars. They only listen less. There was a time when my city was known as Little Athens, after frustrated men had settled down elsewhere and made a difference. The benevolence of those who stayed was great. Their munificence was humble. Streets were named after them. Their charisma resonates. Now, no one comes to these gates, north or south, to ask, where are your wheel marks? Where are your shining stones?
Thank you very much, Tom. Next up, Ben Burns. Our favorite winner.
This is a children's poem that I wrote, actually, but we all used to be children, so. Isn't it funny to think that your daddy was once a little babby who cried, burped, and dribbled and couldn't even crawl? Isn't it a tickle to think your mammy was so little that her fingers were the size of your baby toes, that she couldn't even sit up and had to wear a nappy? Maybe you have two mammies, maybe you have two daddies, or one of them, or three of them, or neither, or a granny, or a granddad, or an auntie, or an uncle, or a cousin, or a nanny, or a minder. No matter who you have, isn't it absurd to imagine all the grown-ups being little boys and girls? Isn't it wild to think your teacher was once a child who sat listening to their teacher, who was also once a child, who also had a teacher, who was once a child, who had a teacher, etc.? Isn't it a cackle to think you were an apple squished inside the twinkle of an eye? This was before you were born, of course, before you knew what it meant to be an apple or a horse. Maybe you really were an apple. Maybe you were a fish. Maybe you were Brussels sprouts, half a carrot or an onion. Maybe you were a mouldy crust or a bin to put the rubbish in. Maybe you were mud stuck to the sole of a shoe. Maybe you were a puddle to run and jump and splash through. Maybe you were snot slipping free of someone's nose. As someone who's been dead since before you had a nose, and who could now be anything, anything goes. You are grass, you are clouds, you are earth, you are stars, you are definitely an alien from Mars. You're a heron, a duck, a pig, a curtain. You're definitely a curtain, of that much I'm certain. You probably used to be wee and poo, or was it that wee and poo used to be you? Both of them can make children very, very sick if they don't wash their hands after going to the toilet. What are you really, a child or a goose? Are you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12? Or are you a number even higher than 12? Are you 7,004,006,521.5? Or are you the water you swallowed by accident in the bath? Did you know that we're made mostly of water? What a laugh. Can you remember exactly what happened this time last year? Last month? Last week? What did you think before you could speak? Be anything you like, there's nothing else to be. Be the top of a mountain, be the roots of a tree. If you accidentally grow up, don't forget to be free.
Lovely. Thank you very much. I wish you'd got the kid now, that would have been great. Just for that one poem that we did, you know, back home. And next up, can we have Simon, please? Get me off this thing.
On Thursday evening, I had a go at writing a sonnet and ended up writing two. So they're first draft-ish, but I thought I'd try them out here. The first one is called Modern Crusade. To fight the infidel at every turn, protect our lives, our thoughts, the true ideal. False prophets' voices, an invidious worm. Bold lies drip-fed through media's fake appeal. The material fated, true inner life they spurn. Our values rejected, no kinship do they feel. Our ways to them are alien, as granite is to fern. Malleable modern mores, a halting broken wheel. We leave homes and families, taking the fight abroad. To mammon's centres, modern arms, no longer just the sword. The loose of modern Sodom shall feel our mighty truth. Disaffected, radicalized, swell our ranks with youth, silent warriors with guns and bombs, a select directed band. Our power crucifies, all shall tremble at the mighty Jihad Band. Thank you. And the second one is called Bardic Eve. The blank page before the words' rhythms flow, a full moon, candlelight, electronic gadget bright, relax, belly laugh, blow off steam, evening. Georgian panels sketched out in paint, brown's warm glow, and a flinty grey that changes tones and timbre in the light. Separated by Lauren cream gloss, not yet purchased beading. This night, the shabby chic pastiche survives before the final weeding to a form rich, warm, well-made contemporary chic. Teriyaki chicken and veggie escallop of corn, flash fry quick, coffee, tobacco, alcohol, tea, and other natural tip trip mind flick. The cursor jams, words jelly settle, cut, copy, paste, go, a syncopated just rhyming sonnet born of the need to know, slick seeding slow, subconscious flight, breathing into a blank page as the words and rhythm flow. Thank you.
Lovely stuff, Stan. Thank you very much. So can we get Stan up, please?
Thank you, Shane. Okay. It's been a while since I was here, so but I have nothing new. So this is the poem I wrote using Fleetwood Mac song title. It is. It's called Last Night. Hypnotized by a landslide of twisted little eyes, I'm running through the garden where bare trees creep like a highwayman. Fireflies frizzle like 24-karat gold, and closing my eyes opens the door to outrage. In the cold, black night, this chain of second-hand news, I'm trying so hard to forget carousels over and over down an endless street in the back of my mind where the eyes of the world looking for someone preaching the blues circle and dance, circle and dance, circle and dance, then crash into me and dial the number to a beautiful ghost whose wild heart, emerald eyes and candle-bright silver heels ask, do you know I need your love? Something inside me, an exquisite thousand-day Italian summer I'll never forget, sings for the inspiration and harmony this born enchanter has thrown down at my gate and garden. Something inside me, an edge of 17 tango in the night sings, don't go, please stay, I need your love, I can't live without you. But I need to know what's behind this landslide of twisted little love lies, that my dream of big love by a wild Saragossa sea hasn't gone into the sun, that love that burns like the blue eyes of a beautiful child isn't drifting away on death bells crying, come on home to me, come on home to me. So closing my eyes, I open the door to outrage, start free falling into my bleeding heart where the ghost of no spoken words, the nightmare nights in Estral and a dissatisfied fire burning crystal blue denim go insane and blow by blow twist and shout every day of these strange times reconsider me, you, you and I, how I feel about secret love and this merry-go-round of I need your love, I don't care, I need your love, I don't care, I need your love, I don't care until I'm so afraid I have to laugh at the tragedy of my own soul. I have to laugh at encore, when the ghosts, secondhand news, all the still of the night, don't stop the revelation. I need to live without you, coming home to stay. And as my heart beats like a hammer, my dream of big love by a wild Saragossa sea and the blue, blue eyes of a beautiful child, say goodbye in a storm of heavenly death bells crying, a fool no more, a fool no more. And then the ghosts are gone, and I'm running through the garden while bare trees talk to me about doing the best I can. Fireflies make freedom is not an impossible task announcements, and a nightbird sings my new soul dressing narrative. If you want to be happy when it comes to love, go your own way, baby. Go your own way.
One day I'll have a witty quip to make about that using these song titles from pop music, but alas, this is not that nice. Well done, Stan. Brilliant as ever. Kieran McCartan, please.
The rain has come. They say that the rain has come, as though there was an inevitability to dark times and a luxury to the bright. But why should we accept that to be right? Or try and make things with their own life malleable enough to fit our own categorizations of honor? Would we not live, last longer and live stronger, finding where we fit in the world that surrounds us, instead of trying to fit finally the world that surrounds us into comfortable compartments of the mind, tainting its existence with that that has tainted ours and left us so many scars.
Thank you very much, Kieran. Okay, so before our last open mic person, I just want to say thank you to Victoria and to Jennifer. Another round of applause. Yeah. Thank you guys all for sitting and listening in this our 1 billionth Ovail. 437. So we're really close to a billion. I mean, it's like potato, potato after you hit 10 or something like that. Don't forget, we have some white whale, we have a couple of banshees, so do grab them if you can. And so to finish off the night, can we please have Gráinne O'Connor?
I'm sorry, it's not a poem, but it's not long. I just wanted to read something to make myself feel better. Berating myself for not feeling sad enough, my mind wanders briefly to a life without my mother. What would it be like if she, you know, well, it could happen, and I try to make it real in my head, just to understand. It's a surprise grief that threatens gently but firmly to release itself out my mouth or eyes unless I think of things that are not dead people who matter. People not yet dead matter. The wordplay brings me back to the church cold and away from my morbid self-indulgence. I'm such a shithead. It feels strange to feel nothing, despite my best efforts to feel it all, as if my musings on a death not yet experienced could somehow reflect the reality of it. I realise at some point between the start and the finish of the funeral that it's probably enough to just be there. Feeling unable to connect with my friend's grief is my privilege, and I silently appreciate this instead of distorting my face to look as distraught as I can. It is not my place to be distraught. This becomes a pleasant weight to shed. My friend is beside me as I have been stoically assessing the moral implications of my thoughts and actions. We carefully chose the middle to back seating in the church like it represented our affiliation to those grieving. Close, but not too close. Not strangers, but not family. She is straining an envelope with its mask out, like a woman steadfast in her endeavour to fit into her Deb's dress one more time. It tears with a loud church echo, and I refuse to indulge in a glance which will definitely result in laughter. Shit, she shouts in a whisper, like using her mask out as a chisel wouldn't break a paper envelope. I stay silent, and she misses my eyes, asking her why she took it out now, where she was going with it in the middle of the funeral, and telling her to put the fucking thing away all at once. Fuck it, it'll have to do now anyway, she retorts, at no one in particular, unless she did hear my eyes. Where do I put it anyway? Do we have to go up to the top of the church after this? Were you at the funeral home? I don't want to go up and shake hands again, sure no one does that twice. Her whisper has reached the threshold of a mutter. Oh my god, stop talking, I rasp back in playful exasperation, because ripping envelopes at a funeral is probably better than imagining what it would be like if your mother was dead. I lose all sanctimonious rights for mourning a fake death at a real funeral.